Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I have read all of Jane Austen, and I am joined by
Teresa, and I have a background in social work and have read none of Jane Austen except for the last 52 chapters of Pride and Prejudice.
And we are two siblings who are reading through Pride and Prejudice. And today we are talking about chapters 50, 51, and 52.
All right. Do you want to just dive right in?
Yeah. How are you feeling after all of this?
I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. Chapter 50 and 51, I don't care about. It's all about chapter 52. So I'm going to painfully get through 50 and 51 in this discussion so we can get to 52 where I can be like, oh, Darcy, I love you. Just so you're aware.
Which I get. 50 and 51 are a little painful. They're a little less painful when you have the context behind everything and you know why everything is happening. As someone who's read it before, they're easier to move through because I know the good stuff's coming.
Yes. If we had stopped at 51 and we didn't read 52, I'd be like, what was the point of this, Kate? This was stupid. These are stupid chapters that no one cares about. But in the context of chapter 52, it makes it worth it. It's not that they're bad chapters. I just want to get back to the romance, which is always my favorite part.
Yeah. Well, 50 and 51 are not very romantic. We kind of open with Mr. Bennet feeling bad for his circumstances and for the choices he's made in life.
Actually, these two chapters feel like they sum up Mr. Bennet and Mrs. Bennet really well.
Yeah.
And their responses to things. And part of me wants to feel bad for Mr. Bennet, that hindsight's 20/20, you know, it's hard now that he knows. But also, you laid all your plans on having a son eventually and it didn't happen. Why didn't you change the plan?
Well, and I think that's something that's indicated just in that first sentence. Mr. Bennet had very often wished before this period of life. So he had been thinking that, oh, maybe I should be putting money aside multiple times over the years. And it's something he hasn't followed through on. So he's had the thought, he's known he should do it, and he hasn't.
And it says, instead of spending his whole income, what would their lives have looked like and felt like if he was putting money aside instead? I don't know.
Well, I think that if he had actively been thinking about those things, he would have had to be an active participant in his marriage and in his house. And he would have had to put boundaries in place around what could be spent. And that would have involved engagement with his wife in a way that he just doesn't seem to care for.
Oh, I imagine she has a horrible spending problem, that Mrs. Bennet doesn't think about money particularly. And the easiest way to get her to go away is to give her money so he can stay and read his books.
Well, in this, they talk about how Mrs. Bennet has no turn for economy, and that Mr. Bennet basically just having a private life where he's in his library and not doing anything and not going anywhere is actually what has kept the family in the black and not in the red in terms of their money.
It is definitely a challenging situation, and I just don't feel sorry for him. I think that there is a responsibility in this era fathers had to their daughters in particular. And even if he had a son, right? Because that was part of it, was like, we were always banking on having a boy and they would just carry on. He still wasn't setting his daughters up for success regardless, because he wouldn't have set aside any dowry for them. And so even with a son in the picture, none of his daughters would have been taken care of.
The implication being the money that he had coming in every year would have moved on to his son. And it's just a very odd way of thinking of things that I don't really understand why. I guess when I read those two pages there at the start of chapter 50, it feels a little bit like Mr. Bennet being kind of woe is me. And yes, there's hindsight in there, but I don't exactly hear remorse for the reasons that it should be there. It's more that he's ashamed now that his brother-in-law has paid for this because he hasn't thought ahead. It's not that he actually feels bad that he hasn't put money aside to take care of his daughters. He is more embarrassed right now than anything else. That's, I guess, how I read it.
I would agree. He's embarrassed. And there's also this part here where he talks about being angry with Lydia. Granted, I'm angry with Lydia too, because I think she's being an idiot. And I'm holding compassion for her also, that Lydia's in a really bad situation. And I wonder if some of his anger is a little bit of projection, that he's angry with himself in reality and he's projecting it onto Lydia.
He's parented by doing nothing. And in some ways, kind of the chickens coming home to roost. This is the consequences of his actions are at his doorstep, because in that household, there were zero boundaries. And in some ways, that's more frustrating to me than Mrs. Bennett, because when Mrs. Bennett talks, she's delusional. Like, her worldview is disconnected from the reality of the circumstances. Mr. Bennett knows what's going on and why things are bad, and he hasn't stepped in at any point to try and remedy these things. That's why I think I get more frustrated with him than Mrs. Bennett. She's more annoying, but I blame him more.
He's also a man in this era. Like, he's the one with power. There's only so much power that Mrs. Bennett has in her station, in her life, in this family. He's the one who's supposed to be in control, and he's not.
Right. It's the fact that he has neglected his responsibilities that makes it so much more upsetting. Something that I found very interesting, and I kind of made note of, was the way that Meriton is gossiping about Lydia Bennett, and that the good nature wishes for her well-doing, which had proceeded before from all the spiteful old ladies in Meriton, lost but little of their spirit in the change of circumstances, because with such an husband, her misery was considered certain. There's something in that that I think sums up the way that at least Austin is writing about some of the older women in this book, is that that generation is upholding the misogyny, is upholding the patriarchy, because it's entertaining.
We see that to this day. We continue to see lots of women in power who continue to perpetuate patriarchy.
Old white women uphold misogyny and sexism.
Yeah. Exactly. And it is the way it has been and the way it continues to be. I think that's what stands out to me in reading this, is that there's so much in this that you would think we're well beyond that. This is based in a different era, but it still rings true today. We have not come as far as we think we've come.
Yeah, especially with the times that we are in. Yeah. What did you think of Mrs. Bennett's oppressively high spirit?
I struggled with Mrs. Bennett's overly joyous nature. For me, what I'm struggling with, and actually what I found later in the chapters as well, is I had similar feelings about Lydia and Mrs. Bennett, that they're just not grounded in reality and in what's in front of them. They are living on a different planet, and you just want to grab them and be like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? And we hear later on that Mrs. Gardner tried to kind of say that to Lydia, of like, this is really bad. You are not in a good situation. And she was having none of it. And I think Mrs. Bennett's kind of the same way. There's also a level of what we've seen from Lizzie and Jean in particular, is that they're there, dear mother. We're going to take care of things over here. It's just easier to placate you.
Right. And I think one of the things that I realized in this chapter, and I don't know why it hadn't clicked before this, but Mr. and Mrs. Bennett fight all the time. And sometimes it's like passed off as sort of teasing each other. But in this particular moment, you can see that they don't actually like each other very much.
I don't imagine this is a marriage of love.
Right. Just this fight that breaks out over buying Lydia wedding clothes. And you can tell that neither of them is talking to each other with respect. And I'm not saying that they should, because we've just spent 50 chapters tearing these two apart. We understand why they wouldn't respect each other. But there was something in this moment where it just clicked for me how how much they don't like each other.
And it's interesting to contrast that with Lizzie's strong desire for a love match. That's not the house that she grew up in.
Right.
It does make me wonder, where did Lizzie get this idea of you need to find a love match? How has that been romanticized for her in this? Where does that idea come from? Because her parents' marriage feels like a marriage of convenience.
Would you like to know my fan fiction theory?
I would love to know your fan fiction theory.
I think that she saw Mr. and Mrs. Gardner fall in love because they got married later, we're led to assume, because Mrs. Gardner is sort of in between ages and she's got younger children. So like 10, 12, even 15 years ago, that was the love relationship that Lizzie probably witnessed happening. She probably witnessed it at the start. She probably then developed this relationship with her aunt that solidified for her what healthy relationships look like. And I think it speaks to the type of relationship and confidence that they have. That was an actual relationship that she witnessed come into formation through, I assume, love. Because you get the vibe from them that it's definitely a love match.
When you said, do you want to hear my fanfic? I wondered if you were going to talk about the two of them. Because I agree. I think of the quote unquote adults in this book, they certainly have the closest to a love match that is described. And I have a lot of like really lovely feelings towards both of them.
Oh yeah.
When Mr. Gardner writes again, all I put was like, what a guy. Oh, I just like him. He's just a good character.
What do you think of Lizzie's musings on Darcy in this chapter?
I did write down a couple times, oh, this is going to be an awkward family dinner when all of this comes together, which I mean, it sounds like they've already had some awkward family dinners, just Lizzie wasn't there to see it. And I think it's interesting that as all of this is going on, her mind's still on Darcy and she's still thinking about him.
This is the moment when it's really hitting her. Like, I think she's realized at this point that she loves him, but this is the moment where she witnesses her parents fighting and then she's like, Darcy. and she realizes that her marriage wouldn't be like this if she had been able to marry him. And then she starts to get jealous. And I like the line, she began now to comprehend that he was exactly the man who, in disposition and talents, would most suit her.
I do like that.
Yeah, she's kind of grieving this relationship.
Well, yeah, she expects she's never going to see him again, that this is all going away. And what I think is interesting, though, is when I put myself in Lizzie's shoes, she's thinking, oh, I could have been happy if I had accepted that proposal. Maybe I should have. But the reality is she didn't love him at that point. And what she knew of him was that he was this horrible, arrogant asshole that she strongly disliked and hoped to never see again. And so I don't actually know if she had accepted that proposal at that time. I don't actually know if she would have a happy marriage.
The thing that makes her fall in love with Darcy and makes us fall in love with Darcy is his ability to change.
And his vulnerability, because what we know of Darcy up until the proposal and then him sharing about his life is he is cold, he is reserved, he's proud, no one really likes him. He's awkward, he can't talk to anyone, he just sits there in silence and is like, this is a great time. And so Darcy's ability to change, I think, is a big part of it, because he does change and he does respond. But I also think within that change is a level of vulnerability.
Right.
So we hear from Mr. Gardner again about kind of everything that's going to happen with Wickham and Lydia and this new plan that he's going to go into the regulars and just more of what is known of Wickham, that he's a horrible, slimy guy and that he continues to convey that. I do appreciate that we know that Lydia is okay, because really up until this point, I kept thinking Lydia was dead. And so it is nice to know that Lydia is fine.
The note that I made after the letter was, poor Lydia. It sounds very much like she's begging to be able to come home.
Yes. But then when we see Lydia, I don't actually know if she did. But yes, it does feel that way. And that there is kind of this like acquiesce that she is allowed to come home from Mr. Bennett.
And I definitely feel in that moment, Mrs. Bennett is concentrating on the wrong things and is worried that he's not going to be in the militia anymore and that Lydia is going to lose all of her boyfriends. And yeah, you just roll your eyes at her, but that it's Jane and Elizabeth who step in to mediate with their father and say, no, Lydia should come home. I know that we're mad at her, but she's still your daughter and this is still her home. And like, you're going to regret it if you don't see her before she goes way up north and we don't see her for years. Do this. And this is going to heal the family. And like Jane and Elizabeth, again, being the parents.
And it's interesting you say that, like, this is going to heal the family. I don't actually know if it will, but that does feel like the perspective of, you know, two young people who have been placed into a parenting role.
Well, they probably know the breach that will happen between Mr. Bennett and Mrs. Bennett if Lydia doesn't get to come. And Mr. Bennett's probably fine with that because he'll just go in his study. But those two know they're going to be spending the rest of their lives with their mother if that happens. And can you please just have Lydia come to the house so mom shuts up about it?
A little bit of self-preservation in there.
Yeah, well, and also mediating their parents' marriage.
Which I'm sure they've done for their entire lives.
Oh yeah, the amount that these guys fight, of course, they've learned to mediate and navigate things in calm tempers.
So I am happy that Lydia gets to come home because I don't think we have any Lydia sisters, but if we did have a Lydia sister and this happened, I'd be really sad if I didn't see my sister before she moved far, far away with a horrible guy that I really hate. Anyways, moving on. Lydia gets married. I don't know how to feel.
Yeah, I think this kind of sums it up. Jane and Elizabeth felt for her probably more than she felt for herself.
And I have all these mixed feelings for Lydia of both sadness and anger and pity. And it's hard to sort out how to feel for her.
Lydia was Lydia still, untamed, unabashed, wild, noisy, and fearless. This didn't change Lydia.
Gosh,
the reason that Jane and Elizabeth feel this so deeply is because this is something that would never happen to them. And if it did, they would have immediately said, oh my God, this is a scary mistake that I got myself into. But Lydia doesn't have that filter. She's one, been brainwashed by Wickham to think that this is a deep, undying love and that he's going to marry her and be with her forever. And two, that's not how she's been trained to think. She's still 16 and that didn't change. She came out of this relatively unscathed from her point of view. So yeah, I'm always surprised that her family expects her to be different. It's like, at what point did you think that Lydia was going to be humble or apologetic or any of those things?
Well, and you say Lydia came out of this unscathed, but I think in Lydia's perspective, I think she thinks she won.
Oh yeah.
She got Wickham, the prize of the militia. What I struggle with and where I go between pity and anger is I still don't have a sense of, does Lydia understand how much debt he was in? All these nuanced things that we know about Wickham and that make him kind of the like slimy, gross guy we don't like. Or is she just so blinded by he's good looking, he's charming, he can talk his way through anything, it's all going to be all right. I struggle with that with her because I wish she knew. And I think she's been told, she just doesn't live in that reality.
I think what I very much read in this and Lydia's entire motivation is just to be the first sister to get married, because that's the crowning achievement that is going to put her ahead of everybody else.
Oh yeah, this whole, Jane, I take your place now and you must go lower because I am a married woman. It's like, oh, come on, Lydia. I can't with you.
I know. You're trying to kind of give her some grace and hold it together up until then. And the fact that both her and Wickham are just acting like they only have ever had happy memories, that nothing bad has ever happened in the world. You're like, okay, obviously there's a little bit of Wickham is a part of this and Lydia's matching his energy. And then that happens and you're just like, the frustration reaches a peak. And for Lizzie, it reached a peak before that, when Lydia's talking about basically flaunting the fact that she's married, not realizing that everyone knows the gossip. Everyone knows that this isn't a happy circumstance. And Lizzie gets fed up and runs from the room. And then she comes back and Lydia does that to Jane.
it's in this moment where I'm like, all right, it's good she's moving up north. No one has to see her for a while and they can all get some peace in their life.
Yeah. And it's that sort of like break with reality that I feel about Lydia.
And the whole, like, she wants to get paraded around and she wants to see everyone. And her mother's indulging all of this.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote down here, she is her mother's daughter. They are peas in a pod in this scenario. I envision that Lydia will be her mother when she grows up.
She's already basically trying to do that by, I'm going to get my sister's husbands.
Which clearly working real well for Mrs. Bennett. Going to work great for Lydia.
I like Lizzie's clapback.
Lizzie is so sassy in this section. When I was reading that line, her clap back, I thank you for your share of the favor, said Elizabeth, but I do not particularly like your way of getting husbands. What I wrote next to it was burn. But what I thought about was, I don't know why, but I will share this fun anecdote because it makes me laugh every time. I remember being in, it must have been elementary school because it was still French immersion, and burn was like a big thing at the time, but I was in French immersion, so it was brûlé, and just all the kids saying it to the teachers all the time. That's all I could think about in this moment.
So Lizzie is all sassy and your brain goes, brûlé.
Exactly. I wanted to share that fun anecdote with everyone because it always makes me giggle.
Mm-hmm. And then Lizzie's basically reflecting on the fact that Wickham doesn't love Lydia as much as Lydia loves him. He's maybe in lust with her, but that's about it. He wanted a companion and Lydia made herself available. Whereas Lydia is enamored with him. She's putting him on a pedestal.
Oh, he's God's gift to Lydia.
Right. I guess that's why I think Lydia has been a little bit brainwashed. And that's where Lydia's been always like on her own special planet a little bit. But this is like an extra break.
I'm really hoping maybe he's at least good in bed. So there's something in this for Lydia.
Right. The reason that she's enamored with him is because she's had good sex for the first time.
I'm just waiting. There's going to be a moment in Lydia's life where this all comes crashing down. Maybe it doesn't, but I'm just waiting for that. At what point does she realize, oh, I married the bad guy?
Right. I don't necessarily hope that this happens to Lydia, but I could very easily see Wickham sleeping with the wrong person's wife and getting in trouble for that. He's going to die in a duel or a husband chasing him off.
Or he's going to get syphilis.
I hope he doesn't get syphilis because then Lydia will probably get syphilis.
Well, hopefully they're not having sex at that point. But yeah, he's not going to die a happy death. You're right. He would be the guy who sleeps with the wrong person's wife.
Or has huge, crazy gambling debts.
Because we already know he does. I did get frustrated again with Lydia when she talks about how horrible the gardeners were to her, that they were horrid, unpleasant all the time I was with them. I'm like, they just paid 10 grand for this to work out.
Which is 10 grand is like $1 million.
It's a lot of money. It's more money than I have. You are so oblivious and so privileged. Again, it's those moments where you just want to shake her and be like, what are you doing? Yeah,
she's entitled. I do think there's like this moment while you're reading this where Lydia's like, hey, I haven't told you, Lizzie, about my wedding. I don't think you were there. You're like, shut up. I don't want to hear about it. And that's basically what Lizzie says. And then she starts telling the story. And then when she gets to the end, you're like, thank God, Lydia told that story.
Because now we know Darcy was involved.
Yes. Darcy? Why was Darcy there?
All I wrote was, what? What? Because I was so excited that Darcy was back in the picture. And I will say, I don't know if I made predictions, but I made a lot of hopes in the last few podcasts of I really want Darcy to come back and save the day and take care of everything. And he does. It's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I love this description in here where Lydia's like, it's a secret. We don't talk about it. And Jane's like, all right, it's a secret. So let's not talk about it. And Lizzie's like, right, secret. And it's this description of, oh, certainly, said Elizabeth, though burning with curiosity. And I was like, me too. I want to know. I want to know. Tell me. So I was feeling Lizzie in all of this.
Yeah. Why was Darcy there? And then we get to magical chapter 52.
Whoop, whoop. I love that Lizzie writes to Mrs. Gardner and Mrs. Gardner's like, I'm going to tell you all of it because this is great. And I love this.
Well, I also love that Lizzie's like, if you can't tell me, then fine. But also, if you don't tell me, I'm going to figure this out. I will do it whatever way I have to. Tell me.
Yes. So tell me nicely.
Yeah. And then Miss Gardner being like, wait, you don't know? I thought we both thought you knew. Okay. Well, if you actually don't know, then I'm definitely telling you everything. Oh my God, I get to tell you.
And in all reality, I do wonder how much Lydia actually knows about the details of this.
Oh, probably nothing.
So I am grateful that we're hearing from Mrs. Gardner because we get more rich details than what Lydia would be saying. Because I think if it was Lydia being like, Wickham had some business dealing with Darcy and Wickham is so wonderful, we wouldn't get the same level of detail.
She'd be an unreliable narrator.
It would be horrible information and no one would care. And we'd all be like, all right, it was weird, but all right, like, let's move on. So I'm just oh so pleased that it is Mrs. Gardner who shares this information with us. And there's just so many, oh, Darcy, you're so cute. I will say up until this point, I don't think I loved Darcy. I liked him as a character, but I couldn't quite figure out like why people are so Mr. Darcy. He's the best. This is what I want. When I like think of the man I'm gonna marry type stuff. And then this happens and I'm like, oh, I love him a little bit too. Maybe not that deeply, but a little bit.
I mean, we've still got 7 chapters to go.
True. I could keep falling in love with him. And I love that Mrs. Gardner also through this is just like, I'm just gonna put it out there. The two of you vibing, right? There's something here. I'm not wrong on this, right?
You guys are secretly engaged, right?
I just love that she's like, I'm just gonna ask now. We weren't talking about it before, but now you've opened the store.
When I read this, the first thing I think about when I'm reading the intro bit where it's like Darcy showed up on our doorstep, I'm thinking back to when he got told by Lizzie that this had happened and he was pacing back and forth in her hotel room. And I'm like, this is what he was doing. He was in his head going, okay, where do I need to go? Who do I need to see? Who do I need to talk to? How can I fix this? And I can see him in his brain formulating the plan. And this is the plan coming into action.
Well, and we learn he left the next day. Mm-hmm. He made a plan and executed. I also try and envision if we were watching the movie, what these scenes would look like. And it's always Darcy on a horse being like, I'm a badass. I'm gonna go save the day.
He is kind of badass. He tracks down Mrs. Young, who we know is a relatively horrible person who did a little bit of human trafficking. And then he tracks down Wickham and Lydia and finds them almost right away. Because at this point, it's been a little while that Mr. Bennett's been in town trying to find them and there's been no word. And we know that Mr. Gardner went into town and was looking for them with Mr. Bennett for a little while. So Darcy's within 3 days, he found Wickham.
Could you imagine if he didn't go? They may never have seen Lydia again.
Especially because in this, Wickham talks about basically going to another country to get married. He fully planned on abandoning Lydia.
Oh, totally.
What did you think of Darcy's first interactions, the way it's described?
I do think it's really sweet that he insisted on seeing Lydia to be like, I need to make sure this girl's okay. And then I appreciate that he's like, let's go home. And she's like, no, I'm not doing it. And he's like, oh, okay, plan B.
And I imagine that meeting between Lydia and Darcy from the two points of view of Darcy basically being like, okay, the woman I love, this is her little sister, I need to rescue her. And going in and being his best big brotherly self, being like, how would I talk to Georgiana in this situation? What would I say? How would I comfort her? And I just imagine Darcy being super soft and being like, go back to your friends. Come on. I will help you in every way that I possibly can. We can make this okay. You are not stuck in this situation. It is okay. I can get you out of this. And Lydia being like, what are you doing here? You weird man that I barely know. All I know about you is that you're prideful and cold and rude and my family hates you. And Wickham has told me these horrible things about you. Well, no, I'm not listening to you. I'm going to listen to Wickham. He loves me. We're going to get married at some point. And I wonder if in those moments, Darcy is kicking himself in the butt a little bit for being cold, for being prideful, for not being a little bit more personable. because that would have made this circumstance so much more fluid. If this had been Bingley coming, I wonder if Lydia would have been a little bit more, oh, well, Jane likes this guy and he's a nice guy. But Darcy set himself up for this circumstance to not go his way and not to be able to get Lydia to leave. And probably the only reason that Georgiana left Wickham was because he's a brother and they have an established gentle relationship.
That's interesting. I hadn't considered it so in depth from Lydia's perspective. I just assumed that she was like, I love Wickham and I'm not leaving. And that was it. But now that you say it that way, it makes a lot of sense that, like, who are you to tell me how to live my life?
Well, I think there probably would have been a little bit of a what the fuck is going on moment for Lydia.
And I wonder if that's part of Lydia mentioning him coming to visit. She's still processing.
And I think there's also a little piece of Lydia mentioning it in that this was someone that they used to gossip about. So it probably felt like juicy gossip that she wanted to share.
Of course. And I do think I would love to be a fly on the wall for the interactions between Darcy and Wickham.
Oh, yeah.
Just the tension in that room would be so palpable. And I just envision Darcy daggers in his eyes being like, I want to murder you. But how much money do I need to offer you to make this better?
I very much like to imagine that Darcy's super soft with Lydia. And then Lydia's like, no, I'm going to marry him. And then he comes back the next day and he's like, fine, Wickham, we're going to talk. And then he's badass. He's like, you are fucking marrying her. And you are not leaving here. I will hunt you down if you do not marry her. So how much money do you want? And I know that Darcy probably wouldn't do that, but we don't get any of that. So that's the scene that I fill in my head of, like, Darcy pressing Wickham up against the wall, being like, you fucking bastard. And Wickham knowing that he has power, because Darcy obviously wants this for some reason. Probably Wickham being like, I don't know why you want this so bad that I married this random girl, but I'm going to use my power to get as much as I can out of you.
Oh, yeah.
That balance of Darcy being like, I'm going to make this happen, but be more reasonable.
You can't ask for the world.
You can't have Pemberley, okay?
It's not going to happen. I do appreciate that Darcy goes to see Mr. Gardner and hears that Mr. Bennet's there and is like, cool, I'll come back tomorrow. It's like, not the person I want to talk to.
Well, there's also that he knows that Mr. Bennet will probably fly off the handle. He knows that Mr. Bennet may not have the most reasonable reaction, but he also probably knows that Mr. Bennet doesn't have the most trusting relationship towards him and will probably get angry at him and be like, where the fuck are they? Tell me where they are. I'm going to go get my daughter right now, and wouldn't have been reasonable at all.
Also, I think his pride would get in the way of letting Darcy do all of this versus Mr. Gardner, although is very resistant to it, also recognizes I'm not talking this guy out of it.
And this is the thing that I love, where Mrs. Gardner is outlining Darcy's character. And she says, I fancy, Lizzie, that obstinacy is the real defect of his character, after all. He's been accused of many flaws at different times, but this is the true one. Nothing was to be done that he did not do himself. It's like, oh, he's a stubborn little boy. He is stubborn. That is his flaws. It's like, oh, it makes sense why he enjoys arguing.
Oh yeah, this is where the sparring comes in and why both of them really enjoy it, because Lizzie's the same way. And I predict down the line that will be a struggle in their marriage and in their relationship.
I could very easily see them having screaming matches over things and getting to that point of like heated super anger, but not in the way that's going to be aggressive or abusive, because there's also going to be that constancy of the place that we're coming from is that we love each other and that being right is not the most important thing. That they'll have that initial flashpoint, both separate and calm down and remember how much they love each other, and then come back together and have a really soft, sweet conversation.
Yeah, I just envision their fights being a little silly.
Like letting off steam more than it is actually about being angry with each other.
Exactly. I do appreciate that Mrs. Gardner is like, don't tell anyone. I guess you can tell Jane. And it's just this really sweet moment in there that I'm like, she gets them. She knows that Lizzie has to tell someone and that Jane would be the person to tell.
I appreciate, and I think it's super sweet in this. Again, I envision that Mr. Gardner and Darcy going back and forth about who's going to pay for things as just like two really sweet guys sitting down trying to out-nice each other.
Yes. Totally.
And I wonder how much of that Mrs. Gardner actually witnessed in terms of them arguing, probably at the supper table, Darcy being like, this is his debt, and this is his debt, and this is how much it will cost. But do not worry about that. And Mr. Gardner being like, of course I'm going to worry about that. I am going to pay. And then Darcy just like cutting his steak, being like, no, you are not. I am going to pay. Just this very civil back and forth. And I love that she described it as they battled together for a long time. But I just imagine it being the sweetest little battle ever.
Well, and it's interesting, just that language of they battled together,
yeah,
not they battled each other. It does give you that feeling of really soft and sweet. They're both fighting, but they're fighting over the same thing. And in the end, the result does matter, but also they're both going about it in the nicest way possible.
And the fact that she wants to make it clear that Mr. Gardner would have paid for these things. He was willing to do that. And that Lizzie writing actually makes him super happy because he's like, ha, I beat you, Darcy. Someone's going to know. Like, that's all Mr. Gardner really needed, was just that he didn't want to get saddled with a secret.
Yeah, he doesn't want the fake benefits of being the one who's done this.
And I don't even know if it's that he wants it widely known, but he wants the family to know that Darcy's done this nice thing. And that, I think, speaks to the fact that the Gardners really like Darcy.
Oh, yeah. And I just envision Darcy really liking the Gardners too. And I always keep coming back to, and these were the people that Darcy was worried about in her life. And look how much time he's spending with them. He wasn't wrong about some of the other people in her life.
Yeah.
But he was really wrong about these two. And I envision down the line them having these lovely dinners together and
coming for a few months at Christmas.
Yeah. Being couple friends. I also think it's really sweet that Darcy's like, I'm going to come back for the wedding because I'm going to make sure Wickham's actually going to marry her.
Oh, yeah. When I say the image of like Darcy backing Wickham up against the wall and being like, you were going to do this. Like, I think there was definitely some threat that Darcy put into this to make Wickham do it. He was marching him there to make sure it got done.
And he essentially did because he shows up with Wickham and is like, cool. So here's where you're going to be. Let's make this happen. And I just think that that's really sweet of him.
He's so sweet. And then what do you think of the closing and Mrs. Gardner's final remarks?
Well, so there's this really sweet line in here that I starred, and I don't think it's my favorite, but it is a really good quote of, he wants nothing but a little more liveliness, and that if he marries prudently, his wife may teach him. She's not outright saying, hey, Lizzie, go marry this guy, but she's outright saying, hey, Lizzie, go marry this guy.
Well, she is basically saying that. She says, pray forgive me if I have been presuming, or at least do not punish me so far as to exclude me from P.
Which I guess I hadn't put together that P was Pemberley.
Yeah, because she thinks that these two have an arrangement already. They know, they have witnessed Darcy with her. They know that Darcy loves her. So I think they have in their head that he is doing this because he's engaged. When in reality, Darcy is doing this not because he's engaged, but just because he loves Lizzie.
Which is just like the sweetest thing ever.
It's so much more sweet than the Gardeners even know.
And I think Lizzie's kicking herself and being like, why didn't I say yes to this guy?
I really enjoyed that closing where she finally says, we really like him and please invite us for Christmas. And I'm sure Lizzie was reading that and she's like, why do these guys think that we're together?
Well, because I imagine Lizzie reads this and she talks about it, that like maybe some of it is that he still has feelings there. Maybe I still have a chance, but she doesn't fully let herself feel that and tries to put the reality of, but there's also all this back stuff with Wickham. She's trying to contextualize it. But I just imagine her reading this and getting her hopes up and really hoping that, when is she going to see him again? Is she going to see him again? Because half a chapter ago, she was certain she would never see him again. And this kind of reignites that possibility.
My favorite quote probably from this section, her heart did whisper that he had done it for her. And it's just like this whisper and this hope underneath. She's just hoping that he did this because of her.
When I read that line, I wrote down, my heart be still. It's so sweet and so soft. I also love that she starts envisioning, when we're married, Wickham's going to be his brother-in-law. Yikes. That's going to be real awkward.
I like that in this, there's a passage where she says she's proud of him, that he put aside all of his pride to do this. And she is proud of him. And I think it's a really interesting, if we're taking the entire Pride and Prejudice paradigm here, that she is feeling pride for Darcy. That's when you're kind of, okay, now is when you know that this will be a good marriage, because you take pride in your partner. You are proud that they exist. You are proud of who they are. You are proud that they can grow and they can change. And like, that feels true.
And how contrasting that is to Lydia's relationship with Wickham,
that she has to almost make up falsehoods to talk about how lovely he is. And that's the difference, that if Lizzie and Darcy were to get together, I know you know they do, but that Lizzie's not going to have to make anything up to be proud of her partner. He is genuinely compassionate, caring, and good.
And she won't have to question that.
The reason that this feels like a healthfully developed relationship is because they are both going to be in love with the real versions of each other, because they also know each other's flaws. Because her being proud of him is because she knows his flaws.
Yeah, this did not come easy to him.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
It's very sweet. And then we transition into Wickham shows up, and it is a bit of a hard transition for me, of you're having all these like lovely good feelings about Darcy, and then Wickham comes in. He's just so slimy and go away. It's all I feel. And he gives off such creep vibes. Just this sentence of, we were always good friends and now we are better.
So there is so much gaslighting that happens in this interaction. The first place that he knows that he is interrupting her means that he is doing something where he knows he is taking power from her. It's an immediate sort of thing, and he acknowledges that he's doing it. And he is putting her in the place of basically having to refuse him. And Lizzie almost knows this. She's like, yeah, you want to play? You want to make me pissed off? Not going to happen. I'm going to smile and be like, sure. This doesn't mean that it has to be an unwelcome interruption. I can play the game too. That line of, we were always good friends. He's twisting the nature of what their relationship was, which was him freaking pursuing her, him flirting with her. He's like, yeah, we were just friends. It's not weird that I ran off with your sister after flirting with you on and off again. So much gaslighting.
And he does what he always does too. He talks about Darcy, and he's the one who brings it up. He's trying to figure out, what does she know? Where do I stand? How is this going to be?
I think this is him trying to figure out, how much of my manipulation is still here? How much power do I still have? I don't know if this is a conscious thing that he is doing, but he is vying to figure out how much power he has so that he can continue his story.
100%.
There's a part in here where he talks about Georgiana.
Yep.
And this is how he talks about his former victim, and that he frames it as, oh, well, I've heard she's improved. And that ickiness of how people talk about their exes when it's not something that anybody's asked for them to talk about. Lizzie has not queried this conversation at all. He is willingly putting it out there, and it's such a narcissistic trait. It's so manipulative and so abusive. It's so gross. And you can see it now for what it really is, whereas at the start, it's not as clear.
I do wonder for you, as someone who's read this many times, when you go back and read some of those initial interactions, do you see this, or is it still kind of veiled in there?
Oh, you totally see it. So in here, when he starts kind of going on about the living and the sermons and the back and forth and the back and forth, and he goes, yeah, but I told you that. I was like, no, you didn't.
I wrote that down too. I was like, you're a liar. You did not talk about that.
And this is again, gaslighting. So I went back to check my memory. And in the initial conversations when he is talking about this, yes, he does say there was some condition in it that allowed it not to be given to me. And then he says, so Darcy didn't, and Darcy decided to be spiteful. And that's the trait of the proficient manipulator, because they tell you enough of the truth that later when you call them on it, they can say, yeah, I was honest about that. And it's gaslighting that he's doing with half-truths. He told a half-truth with a specific tilt to it, but with just enough truth that he can have a defense when reality comes to light.
So manipulative. And I love that Lizzie's not here for it. And there's this line here, she had walked fast to get rid of him. And I was like, yep, me too. Like, that's what I would have want to. And in all honesty, there was some parallel, and it made me think a little bit about Collins and Charlotte, that Charlotte does a lot of things to try and get rid of him. If Lizzie had married Wickham, similar marriages, I expect. I guess now Lydia's going to have a similar marriage. I don't think she'll be as cognizant.
No, Lydia's going to be anxious and always pleading for more attention. She's going to be Mrs. Bennet. I like that in this back and forth that happens here, every single time that Wickham tries to vie with a lie, like, oh, Mrs. Reynolds loves me. What did she say about me? Lizzie's like, she said you were a shithead. And he's like, oh, I heard you met with Georgiana. What did you think of her? She was lovely. I really loved her. She was great. And Lizzie is just having none of it. Lizzie just keeps calling him on every single thing. But there reaches a point where she knows if I push him, he's getting angry. Lizzie can sense it. And she's like, this guy's not worth it. And she just turns around and she's like, let's just be friends.
Yeah, let's not fight. We're brother and sister now. We won't worry about the past.
Which is an excellent way to deal with a narcissist, is you call them on it until you reach that point where it starts to fall apart. And instead of continuing to have the argument with them, you back down and you say, you know what? It's fine. This doesn't really matter that much. We can move on. Because at that point, you've already torn down all of their walls. But by offering the olive branch, if they turn you down, they lose all faith. They look horrible.
It's an excellent way to deflate a narcissist.
And that's why this is just such a magic little interaction. Even though it's gross, it's just the shutdown that we wanted. We needed Wickham put in his place.
Just perfectly, that he hardly knew how to look. For a guy who knows exactly what to say every time, always knows what's going on around him, is always in control, she's completely taken the wind out of his sails and he's a little lost. And it's great.
It's amazing. Fuck Wickham.
I will say, I think this was one of my favorite chapters so far. You get the like lovely of Darcy and Lizzie just coming into her own and her power.
Mm-hmm.
This just feels really impactful to me and definitely one of my favorite chapters.
Well, we are coming up on my favorite chapters. We'll see if that sticks, but this is definitely the chapters where you're super entrenched in the feels. It's super like, oh, Darcy, I love you.
I'm excited to keep reading. And especially we're so close to the end that part of me is like, there's not a lot of book left for them to come together and be together. So I guess if I'm making a prediction, my prediction is going to be that it's bittersweet for me and that they're going to get together, but then we're not going to hear a lot about their life together.
Right.
I want the nitty gritty because I think they will live happily together, but I want to be present for those bickering moments and for those fights and things. And I don't think we'll get it. And then my favorite quote, which we didn't really talk about, but it stood out to me, was this: the contents of this letter threw Elizabeth into a flutter of spirits in which it was difficult to determine whether pleasure or pain bore the greatest share.
Mm.
That just felt so profound to me, the juxtaposition of pleasure and pain and their connection to one another and how both might be true. It just perfectly sums up life to me. Do you have a favorite quote?
Yeah, it's the one we already mentioned. Her heart did whisper that he had done it for her. It's just
pretty great.
You feel that right in the core.
Your heart whispers. All right, so what chapters are we reading next?
We are reading 53, 54, and 55.
Excellent. And then we're almost done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully people have been enjoying this. You can find us on social media at Austin Therapy Podcast. You can also find Kate's meme account at Austin Therapy. And we're going to start planning our next book soon, which I'm really excited about. So
I have converted you.
Yes, you have. You have officially converted me. So anyways, we hope that people keep listening.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.